five lighters on my dresser, and yes, son, you know I got to get paid.
It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy! Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. Sorry. What is the deal here? Hello? Nope. Oh my god. I fucking hate that all my settings get messed up every time Mix updates. Sorry. I can't hear anything that's going out, so I'm very weird. Alright. Talk? Talkity talk talk. Okay. Oh well. Oh! There we go. It's very faint, but I can hear it at least. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is March 7th, 2021. And that means that it is Monday. Monday.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On the bright side, though, it is 1903 UTC, which means it's time for news to me. We usually start at 1900, or about there. As you can tell, I'm usually a minute or two late, but I try my best to get there. Hello, welcome, Unimagine and X1. Thank you for being here and hanging out, and everybody in comm. If you want to hang out and chat during the show, all you gotta do is SSH over to sdf.org. And once you're there, just press com, type C-O-M, press enter, and G for go to, and then type anonradio, all lowercase, all one word, and you can be in here with cool people like Stug and X1 and Unimagine. So, let's go ahead here. There's a lot going on. One of the big new pieces of news in my life is that at the office, one day of the week, starting in April, one day a week we'll be going back into the mandated to go back into the office, and then in May we'll be doing 3 days a week. So the number of days, hey Rudy, welcome. So because of that, the number of live shows will probably go down as the number of days I'm working from home goes down. So we'll see how that plays out and how we can work that into the show. But just as kind of a heads up, that's coming in about a month or so. All right, so there's a lot of news and a lot of places to go with it. So let's go ahead and start the way we pretty much always start. And that's
world news.
That's right. Welcome, Havoc. Thanks for tuning in. Climate crisis. Amazon rainforest tipping point is looming, data shows. The Amazon's approaching a tipping point, data shows, after which the rainforest will be lost with profound implications for the global climate and biodiversity. Computer models had previously indicated a mass dieback of the Amazon is possible, but the new analysis is based on real-world satellite observations over the past 3 decades. Novel statistical analysis shows that more than 75% of the untouched forest has lost stability since the early 2000s, meaning it takes longer to recover after drought and wildfires. The greatest loss of stability is in areas closer to farms, roads, and urban areas, and in regions that are becoming drier, suggesting that forest destruction and global heating are the cause. These factors may already have pushed the Amazon close to a critical threshold of rainforest dieback. The study doesn't enable prediction of when the tipping point could be reached, but the researchers warn that by the time the triggering of the tipping point could be detected, it'd be too late to stop it. Once triggered, the rainforest would transform to grassland over a few decades at most, releasing huge amounts of carbon and accelerating global heating. Tipping points on a planetary scale are among the greatest fears of climate scientists, as they're irreversible on human timescales. In 2021, the same statistical technique revealed warning signs of the collapse of the Gulf Stream and other key Atlantic currents, with an almost complete loss of stability over the last century. A shutdown of these currents would have catastrophic consequences around the world, disrupting monsoon rains and endangering Antarctic ice sheets. Another study showed that a significant part of the Greenland ice sheet's on the brink of a tipping point, which would lead to 7 meters of sea level rise. Many researchers have theorized that an Amazon tipping point could be reached, but our study provides vital empirical evidence that we are approaching that threshold. Seeing such a resilience loss in observations is worrying. The Amazon rainforest stores huge amounts of carbon and they could be released in the case of an eventual partial dieback. So, yeah, it's not looking so good for good old planet Earth. The government of Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, has been harshly criticized for encouraging more deforestation, which soared by 22% in the year to November, the highest level since 2006. It's really complicated to say what's going to be first, reaching a tipping point by loss of stability of the natural vegetation system, or just the bulldozers reaching the forest. So, a little troubling there, but yeah, if war doesn't get to us, I mean, we'll just destroy the planet we're on, and that might help too. Now let's go over here into Mali, across the ocean. French army says senior Al-Qaeda leader killed. France's army said Monday that its anti-jihadist force in Mali had killed Yahya Doujadi, a senior leader of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, AQIM, responsible for finance and logistics. Doujadi, an Algerian, also known as Abu Omar al-Jazari, was killed overnight from February 25th to 26th, around 160 kilometers north of Timbuktu in central Mali. His death once again weakens Al-Qaeda's governance in Mali, it added, calling him a major link in northern Mali and especially the Timbuktu area to the Qaeda-aligned GSIM group. Hey, M. Stoney, welcome, welcome. Thanks for tuning in. A former emir of Al-Qaeda's Libyan operations, Doujadi fled to Mali in 2019 and settled in Timbuktu, helping organize the group and coordinating supplies, financing, and logistics. It added that he was killed by ground forces supported by a Tiger attack helicopter and two drones. France is preparing to redeploy some 2,400 troops away from Mali to other countries in the Sahel region facing cross-border jihadist insurgencies after falling out with the military junta in Bamako. So, this is going to be very interesting to see. France is down here in Africa doing the big, the heavy lifting on a lot of anti-terrorism work, so it's kind of glad they're getting some big wins out there. Uh-oh, Firefox tells me, sorry, we just need to do one small thing to keep going, which means let's just hang on for a second while that restarts.
World News.
Man, it always takes so long to freaking connect, especially on Mondays. I guess it's because it's busy. I don't know. Dial-up's kind of funny like that. All right. Well, here we go. Nigeria's super cop, Abba Kyari, pleads not guilty on drug charges. A high-profile Nigerian police commander, once dubbed the country's super cop, pleaded not guilty to drug smuggling charges on Monday, a month after he was arrested in a spectacular fall from grace. National Deputy Police Commissioner Abba Kyari was already suspended after he was implicated in the case of a Nigerian social media influencer, Rahman Abbas, known as Hush Puppy, who pleaded guilty to money laundering and other crimes in the United States. Kyari, who became famous for exposing a string of high-profile crimes in Nigeria and once led an anti-kidnap squad featured in a documentary, has denied charges linked to the case. In the separate narcotics probe, he and six others, face eight charges, including trafficking cocaine, after investigators said he was caught on camera trying to bribe a drug enforcement official over a cocaine deal. The judge adjourned the case until March 14th to consider bail applications. Proceedings continue on March 28th. So, we'll see what happens, but he's still in the news. Yeah, so, get that. Alright, so what else is going on? Well, we still haven't got to the Ukraine yet, but we're getting there. And this guy...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
He's always right there, ready to jump on to something else. Let's talk about it. The identity of South Korea's next leader will be determined this week by the economy, housing prices, and incomes. But the road to the presidential Blue House will also be dotted with the wreckage of the country's poisonous gender politics. The successor to Moon Jae-in, who is restricted by law to a single 5-year term, will not be able to ignore the fallout from a campaign defined by the culture war being waged in the world's 10th biggest economy. On one side, a feminist movement that led the Me Too movement in Asia. On the other, young men whose resistance to the modest gains made by South Korean women has been exploited by two main candidates. In 2018, women took to the streets in record numbers to call for government action against an epidemic of mulca, the use of spy cams to secretly film women, often in public toilets, and help bring down several public figures, including a candidate for the presidency, for sexual misconduct. A year later, they helped overturn a decades-old ban on abortion and shone light into the darkest corners of an entrenched culture of male chauvinism, unequal pay, and the expectation that their careers will end when they have children. Despite the global success of its pop music and TV dramas, South Korea continues to perform poorly in international comparisons of women's rights. The 2021 World Economic Forum Gender Gap Report ranks it 102 out of 156 countries in an index that examines jobs, education, health, and political representation. South Korea has by far the largest gender pay gap among OECD countries at about 32%, while women account for just over 19% of MPs in the National Assembly. Only 5.2% of Korean conglomerate board members are female, and experts say the country's record low birth rate proves how difficult it is for women to combine careers with family life. Women have responded by challenging social norms, from refusing to wear bras and publicly destroying their makeup collections, to vowing to never marry or have children, or in some cases, have sex with men. 5 years after its first female president, Park Geun-hye, went on trial on corruption charges, South Korea's election campaign has brought the anti-feminist backlash into sharp focus. Online men's rights groups, often you'll see it abbreviated MRA, this is like a... similar to like the incel kind of group, this is kind of a toxic community, have condemned hiring quotas, while calls to abolish the Ministry of Gender Equality and Family, created in 2001, have been seized on by the front runner. The anti-feminist movement's list of grievances include the weighty subject of military service exemptions, but often finds expressions in vicious personal attacks on prominent women. They include Ahn San, the triple Olympic archery gold medalist, who was abused during last summer's 2020 Tokyo Games simply for having short hair. Last year, South Korea's biggest convenience store pulled ads for sausages after a so-called men's rights group complained that a promotional image, a hand gesture commonly used to indicate something small, had once been used by a feminist group to exploit male anxiety over penis size. The misogyny contagion spread to the country's politics late last year when Cho Dong-young, it's just funny to me, a military specialist, was forced to resign just 3 days after she had been appointed co-chair of the ruling Democratic Party's election committee. I'm still a kid, I'm sorry. Sometimes I'm dumb. If I see Dong, it makes me laugh. The misogyny contagion spread to the country's politics late last year when Cho Dong-yu, a military specialist, was forced to resign just 3 days after she had been appointed co-chair of the ruling Democratic Party's election committee. Cho is a Harvard graduate with successful military and academic careers, stepped down after a YouTube channel and broadcaster questioned her suitability for office. Her crime? Having a child out of wedlock during her first marriage. So this is just terrible. There's a bit more. We've made about halfway through. You can go to theguardian.com. To check out the full story if you'd like. But yeah, there's a lot of misogyny and old school chauvinism alive and well in South Korea. So anyway, it's really, not so good. All right. There's a lot more news going on, but we got to play a song and kind of break up the monotony. And then we'll talk about the Ukraine because, man, the war going on there, because there's a lot happening. So anyway, this is I Gots to Get Paid from ZZ Top. We played the first minute or so whenever I was getting ready. So, like to hear it? Here I go. I got
25 lighters for my 25 folks. Gonna break the bank, gonna run a 5 moon. About to rip the suits with 25 flows. I got 25 lighters, well, don't you know? 25 fly diamonds in my ring. 25 12s in the trunks to bang.
Oh, load.
Making moves, making 25 mil. Gonna knock off a big time 99 Seville. Come on. 25 lighters on my dresser, dresser. I got to get paid. I got 25 lovers on my dresser, dresser.
You know I got to get paid.
By 25 doors. Representing for the doors and holding 25 more. It's easy done, put 25 out the door. Hitting the highway, gonna do it until 25 shows. Put 25 lighters on my dresser, dresser. On my dresser, dresser. Yes, sir.
I got to get paid.
Come. 25 lighters on my dresser. Yes, sir.
I got to get paid.
25 lighters on my dresser. Yes, sir.
A non-radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access UNIX system.
Oh, that's right. You're listening to a non-radio powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you. So thank you for being here. And thanks for hanging out. It's a good time. We're lots of news going on today. Well, I'm tired. I'm worn down. I was up late last night. Work made me crazy. Hey, Publius, welcome. The short version is that I was messing with updating some Python stuff, and it was very old, and so it was hard to deal with. And so I was up late many nights last week trying to get it to work, and then come to find out just one of the driver parameters needed to be updated. But it wasn't a documented, it's not a documented parameter, and it's just mentioned in a Stack Overflow article. Like so many things, some of the most obscure settings are like downvoted Stack Overflow questions from 5 years ago. Anyway, sorry, I'm a little unrambly now. We're going to focus. Let's talk about the Ukraine.
World news.
First, a truck crashed through the gates of a Russian embassy in Dublin and a man was arrested. man's been arrested after a large lorry crashed through the gates of the Russian embassy in Dublin. Irish police said the lorry hit the gates of the embassy on Orwell Road in South Dublin at about 1:30 p.m. on Monday. Video footage shared on Twitter shows a lorry reversing towards a set of black gates before crashing straight through as people can be heard laughing and cheering. The truck appears to belong to a church supplies company, according to images shared online. A Garda spokesman said an incident of criminal damage at the property was being investigated. The arrested man has been taken to Rathfarnham Garda station. The embassy's been the scene of protests in recent days following the invasion of Ukraine. Yeah, it's kind of funny, right? Publius brought it up here. The Russian embassy is on Orwell Road? Classic. And that, my friend, is 100% true. It is on par with the course. All right, well, speaking of Ireland, there is... let me find her. Where did you go? Where did you go? An Irish medical student is attempting to leave Ukraine after sheltering for days from airstrikes and shelling in the eastern town of Sumy. Rachel Diallo, Diallo, who is 19 and from Carlow, was among hundreds of international students in the city close to Ukraine's border with Russia. Sumy has been under attack by Russia since its invasion started last month. Rachel told BBC News NI, which I guess is, I don't know, North. Anyway, BBC News NI, she had been mentally blocking out the danger she faced. It's understood she left Sumy on Monday after she was picked up by two Scottish men attempting to rescue who her family had been in contact with. Her sister, Christiana, said she passed safely through a number of checkpoints and was staying overnight at a safe stopover location before a curfew begins. The relief... Oh, Northern Ireland. Thank you, Publius. The relief, just knowing that they're safe and sheltered, she told BBC Radio. We're hoping for the best now. A previous rescue effort failed on Sunday when a minivan used by the men was targeted by warning shots from Russian forces as they tried to enter the city. However, they managed to reach an agreed pickup location on Monday morning. Rachel told RTE's Morning Ireland program they hoped to travel in the direction of Poland, a journey that could take up to 20 hours. She's not sure if they could make use of humanitarian corridors. I left behind lots of friends who are still stuck there and still looking for ways to get out, and most of my belongings as well. I'm fine, just trying to stay in high spirits and keep positive that we'll make it to Poland. Christiana said the Scottish men had their phones seized during the attack on Sunday before being told to turn back. Luckily, they were able to find an alternative route into Sumy and stayed there overnight, and then they continued their mission in the morning. So... hopefully they'll be able to get their citizen back, but I thought that was an interesting tie that these two stories shared. Speaking of ties, let's talk about France real quick. France 24 has an article called, excuse me, oh no, hold on. Jeepers, I'm still here, I'm just dying.
It's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
I think I can talk. Okay, I can talk. You gotta breathe and then swallow your spit. But you can't do both at the same time. It will cause trouble. If only we could absorb fluids through our lungs. Like if I could just gulp down, get one lung full of coffee, and then it just slowly absorbs over the day. Oh, man. How cool would that be? Welcome, DVF. Welcome, welcome. Thanks, Doug. I am glad I survived as well. So let's go to France. Macron bucks Western trend by keeping dialogue open with Putin. While most of the world is shunning President Putin over Russia's invasion of Ukraine, one of the few leaders keeping an open line of communication is French President Emmanuel Macron. His diplomatic efforts to prevent the war failed, but he's not giving up. The two men have spoken four times since Russian forces attacked Ukraine on February 24th and 11 times over the past month. The French leader, whose country holds the European Union's rotating presidency, is now one of the few outsiders with a view into Putin's mindset at the time of the largest military invasion in Europe since World War II. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is also becoming a mediator, meeting Putin on a surprise visit to Moscow on Saturday and speaking with him again by phone on Sunday. Macron's relentless push for dialogue reflects France's post-war World War II tradition of carving out its own geopolitical path and its refusal to blindly follow the United States. After Russian troops pushed deep into Ukraine, Macron's resolve to maintain communication channels is providing Western allies with insight into Russia's leader's state of mind. Of course, coming from France, a story about how the French president, who's up for re-election this year, is such a great guy. I would always, you know, we'll have to wait and see if there are any other stories talking about how great Macron is doing here. So anyway, the president is not naive, Le Drian said on the eve of Russia's invasion. He knows the methods, the character, and the cynical nature of Putin. So France is standing out, doing what they do, and I think that's cool. But let's look at the other side of the freaking fence. War in Ukraine, the Russians leaving Russia for Finland. At Valima, Finland's border crossing with Russia, 120 miles east of Helsinki, buses and cars stop for passports and customs checks. These aren't Ukrainians, they're Russians. And although flow isn't heavy, it's constant. Some people are anxious to get out of Russia because there's been a persistent rumor that President Putin's government might soon introduce martial law to deal with the demonstrations. The flights to Europe halted. The only way out of the country is by car crossing this border, or by train. We spoke to one young Russian woman who was leaving for the West, one of the lucky ones who had an EU visa before the sanctions were announced. She was in despair at what was happening. People in Ukraine are our people, our family, she said. We shouldn't be killing them. We should think of going back. Would she think of going back, I asked. Not while our dreadful government is there. It is so, so sad. She said most Russians don't want this war, but they risk going to jail if they try to stand up. In Finland, there's immense sympathy for people like her, just as there is for Ukraine and its inhabitants. This sympathy and the fear that Russia might lash out at another neighbor, such as Finland itself, is changing attitudes to Finland's traditional leanings towards neutrality. According to the latest opinion polls, a growing majority of Finns believe that it's time for their country to join NATO and access the protection that membership of the alliance would bring. Back in Helsinki, the train from St. Petersburg is pulling in, carrying hundreds more people anxious to flee Russia. Most trains are fully booked, with ticket prices soaring. The amount of money passengers leaving Russia can bring is limited. The ruble is in a state of collapse. The Russian economy is threatened by sanctions and the withdrawal of many large Western companies. Russia's government is desperate to avoid a run on the banks. Will sanctions against wealthy Russians cause them to turn on President Putin? It's certainly not impossible, but it's unlikely to force him to stop. Another woman who has left Russia, this time from Istanbul, told us by phone she'd been terrified of a return to life as it was under the Soviet Union. I'm 30.